Hey, welcome to the podcast for the Security Channel of Network Computing. My name is Curtis Franklin. I'm a senior technology editor and your host for these podcasts. Today, we have a really interesting podcast that kind of follows along a theme that seems to be developing here. I'm going to be talking with Dan Verton, who has written a book called The Insider, A True Story, where he's talking about what goes on with the data that's stored inside large corporations. The way this fits into the theme that's developing is that we have a bunch of interviews lined up on the topic of phishing and data theft and privacy, sort of a grand conglomeration of ideas that has been in the news a lot and is getting the attention of a great number of people, whether they are consumers or congressmen. In the coming week or two, I'm going to be talking with David Zumwalt and Mike Gibson, and taken together, these are three super interviews, if I do say so myself, not because of anything that I've done, but because of the information these folks bring to the area of privacy and data security. As usual on these podcasts, this interview was done via telephone, so that explains the difference in quality. I keep working on being very still and very quiet during the 20 minutes or so of the interview, but you may hear a little bit of fidgeting, and for that, I apologize. Well, with that, let's get into it. I'll be back at the end to tell you a little bit more about what's coming up. But for now, enjoy this interview with Dan Verton, author of The Insider, A True Story. Now, you have written a new book, The Insider, A True Story. Can you give us a little bit about, you know, what your book is about?
Sure. My book actually explores what I'm calling the itinerant life of proprietary data. Quite frankly, it looks to dispel this notion that companies and government agencies actually know where their data is at any given time. And through both a historical account of various insider incidents that have occurred throughout history, as well as some brand new, very hard data on what's actually happening behind the firewall, I try to show, and I think I successfully show, that we really don't know with any level of confidence where our proprietary or secret data is traveling at any given time. So that's basically what the book does.
Now, that seems awfully counterintuitive. We hear so much about how important data is, what a critical corporate asset it is. Companies tend to know where their money is kept at any one time. How can they not know where their data is?
Well, it's a very interesting way to put it. In fact, probably more than 70% of the of a public company today is contained in, its value is contained in intellectual property, intangible assets, in other words, data. And probably 99% of that is in digital format. And the real interesting thing that I found is that companies and agencies have spent tens of millions of dollars year after year on things like firewalls, intrusion detection systems, various other monitoring devices, and yet they still are hemorrhaging, and I'm serious when I say this, they are hemorrhaging secret proprietary data, customer data, and privacy-protected data. And I've got the actual statistics to prove it, and from real-world risk assessments. It's just really mind-boggling.
Well, now, is this something, are we talking primarily about the small and medium-sized businesses who are having trouble with this? I mean, surely our major financial institutions have a pretty good handle on where their data lives.
Oh, You would think so, but some of the institutions that I profile are Fortune 100 firms.
Wow.
Let me give you some examples of what I found, actually. You mentioned the banking and finance sector. One of the nation's top 20 financial firms, okay? This is a financial institution with more than $80 billion in assets under its control. They discovered a spreadsheet containing 200 customer names, account numbers, account balances, tax identification numbers on its way from inside the organization to a private Hotmail account.
Now, is this typically, on a case like this, is this a simple instance of fraud, or was someone simply being careless with the data?
Well, my data shows that this is unfortunately a very regular occurrence. A 48-hour snapshot, okay, a two-day snapshot at this one firm. They also found a lot of institutions in the financial sector communicating with customers via email and asking them for things like account numbers, names, social security numbers, and so on and so forth. So there are employees who are either not trained or not educated in security enough to know that this is a very insecure way of communicating this type of sensitive data, and what we found in another verticals is that, quite frankly, they view the security protections that should be in place as a hindrance to their productivity and to getting their jobs done. And they go ahead and they do things like communicate via email on these very sensitive issues. And it's just rampant throughout every single vertical sector that I looked at.
Well, you're talking about employees will be charitable and say being careless with customer sensitive and proprietary information. In the last 2 to 3 years, we've had this flood of regulation and legislation that has been brought in to deal with customer information, private information.
Right.
Is this not making things dramatically better?
Well, quite frankly, it's not, only because there's this gap. There's this invisible gap in the security at most companies today. And we haven't until now had the technology that would actually determine the flow of sensitive, privacy-protected data that was going through this hole in our security defenses. Now, for the first time, we've got a technology that's being placed out there doing these types of things like risk assessments where they're finding, to give you an example, one healthcare organization, a government healthcare organization nonetheless, had more than 2,000 HIPAA violations in 48 hours.
That's an impressive number.
Yeah. In 48 hours, there were 2,000 instances of private healthcare information leaking out to undisclosed locations on the internet, unprotected, unencrypted, in just 48 hours. So it just really blows me away every time I see the results of these assessments. Another private sector healthcare organization had a gut feeling, according to some of the executives that were looking at the particular technology. They had a gut feeling that they were losing some sensitive information from inside their organization. So they installed this particular system that I profile in my book. They installed it, and within 48 hours, one of the very first things they found leaving was an email with the names and all the private health data on 500 HIV and AIDS patients.
Wow.
A private Hotmail account. So, you know, again, we've spent tens of millions of dollars on a lot of security technologies, and we thought we were secure. But the problem is that we're not looking from the inside out, and we're not making sure that those we trust with access to the data are handling it properly.
You know, you bring up a good point. I know in my work around the networking and security industries, the vast majority of the products and the technologies that have been deployed have been outward facing, trying to keep hackers from getting into our systems.
Right.
It sounds like that while we can't ignore that this is, you know, yet another instance of POGO getting it right, We have met the enemy and it is us.
That's correct. And let's assume for sake of argument, let's assume that some of these emails that are going out containing sensitive proprietary data, customer data, privacy protected data, let's assume that they're being used for legitimate administrative purposes. Well, the problem with that is, even if it hasn't left the organization, we're handling it and managing this data in such an insecure fashion that it now puts that data at greater risk of exploitation by external hackers, because it's not sitting in one protected location anymore. Now it's sitting in unencrypted emails on various users' desktops. And the end users are not making the connection between the data that's sitting on their desktops in unencrypted, unprotected form and the vulnerability that it puts that data at. So, very interesting set of circumstances.
Now, you mentioned that we've only relatively recently had the tools available to allow us to really see the scope of the problem.
That's correct.
Having said that, is it your sense that this is a problem that has been there as long as we've had networks and data sitting at a confluence, or is this something that's getting worse as time goes on?
Well, it's an interesting question. As I mentioned earlier, I give quite a lot of historical background on the insider threat in my book, and I go all the way back to Charles Revson, the founder of the Revlon Corporation, prior to the information age, really, prior to the public internet and computer networks. And the insider problem was a real serious threat then, and it has only gotten worse. The argument that I make in the insider is that the information revolution, where you have the confluence of the public internet and the desktop computer, that has created what I refer to in the book as the Big Bang theory of information loss, and it just has created a problem that we are no longer capable of handling on our own. And while we have policies and procedures in place throughout the private sector and the government that mandates, you know, legislation like Sarbanes-Oxley and Gramm-Leach-Bliley and HIPAA, all of these things fail. And the one reason they fail is because until now we have not had a technical enforcement mechanism that could ensure that our people are following those policies and procedures. And finally, we're starting to get to the point now where the technology is developing that we can stop both malicious and inadvertent disclosures of sensitive information.
All right. You made a nice segue for me there, and I appreciate it, because, you know, having become aware that this is a huge problem, everybody's saying, okay, what do we do about it? And is this one where there is a technology fix? We can apply a product onto the onto the network and solve the problem?
Right. Well, you know, there is, and I want to steer clear of endorsing any one particular technology, but for anybody who's listening who wants to learn about some of the technologies that are available, they're profiled in my book. In fact, the more than 50 real-world risk assessments that I had exclusive confidential access to write this book were based on one particular technology that has only been out for the last year. And quite frankly, I will tell you that there is an appliance out there that people are saying, you know what, we're locked down. We really don't have any problems. And they'll just go, well, look, you have nothing to lose. Just plug the box in on your network and do a search. And they are finding that, you know, like one particular bank 2 weeks ago from today was convinced that they had webmail access controlled and locked down. They had forbidden its use in the enterprise, and they were convinced that they had the tools that were available in the marketplace in place, and they were set. The very first search that this appliance provided them, the very first email was an email from an insider that said to somebody on the outside, I finally found a way around these webmail controls. Now, the room, you know, burst out in laughter, but it was a very serious thing. And this is exactly the type of argument that I'm trying to make in the book, is that we think we're secure because we've spent so many millions of dollars on the various technologies that are out there, but they all together, they only do 80 to 90% of the problem. And it's that 10% that's left over that we naively think is being taken care of, but that's where the holes are. And so, yes, to answer your question, yes, there is a new technology coming out there. I'll let people make their own judgments on that. If they want to read the book and find out what it is, that's fine with me.
Okay. Well, with that said, is there no role at all for employee training and developing a culture, or is it that no matter what you do in that regard, it's not going to be effective?
Well, I used to think that there was a very big role for employee education, employee training, and nurturing a culture of security, you know, to use all the buzz phrases for a second there. But quite frankly, when it boils down to the fact that human beings are fallible, human beings, when they perceive that there is very minimal or no risk, they will opt for the bottom line, which is productivity and efficiency, rather than security. And quite frankly, there is this even smaller percentage of malicious intent that is out there that is taking advantage of what to them appears to be a gaping hole in security. So quite frankly, this is a situation where you can't have effective policies and procedures unless you have a technical enforcement mechanism. And that's really what it boils down to.
Okay. Now, you mentioned several times having these risk assessments that you've had access to.
Right.
How critical is it for companies that they perform a risk assessment in order to develop their strategy for dealing with this?
Well, risk assessments are critical no matter what you're talking about, whether it's the insider threat or whether it's external hackers you're worried about, or even physical security. Every corporate executive responsible for security ought to be doing periodic and regular risk assessments, and including red teaming and things of that nature. For this particular problem, it is, I don't even know if I could put into words how important it is, because there is no other way that we can know. There is no other way for a corporate executive in any industry vertical to understand what data is leaving their networks. And quite frankly, as I said, I keep harping on this, but we thought we knew because we thought we had all the technology in place, but still there's this hole in all of those technologies that's big enough to where we have a false sense of security. And the only way to do it is to perform one of these risk assessments. It takes a day or 2 days, and you will know exactly what proprietary data is leaving. So, it's absolutely critical.
Okay, now, I think it's important. You talk about risk assessment. I've worked with products that do vulnerability assessments.
Right.
But it sounds like what you're talking about goes far beyond a simple computer or network vulnerability assessment. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think to explain exactly what this does, the technology that I profile in the Insider basically does this. It's an appliance that plugs into a network. It sits there passively, and it basically provides a snapshot of everything that happens on the network in the period that you have it activated. And it provides you with a forensics capability. It does this in a way that really has revolutionized storage and processing capacity. I mean, they're operating at gigabit speeds. They've been able to do this on NASA's network. To give you an idea of the size and scope of networks that this device can handle. And what it does is, you can go on there, you don't have to be an information security professional, which is really critical because, up until today, you had security devices that are all about bits, bytes, and baud rate. You really had to know how to interpret zeros and ones to know what was happening. But non-security experts, they know what an email looks like. They know what a web page looks like, or a web posting looks like. They know what an email attachment is. And so you can do things like searches against code words for proprietary data, or anything you want, and it'll show you all of the documents, all of the users, the IP addresses and everything, and where that data went. So what this is actually showing you is who's managing, who has access to your data, and where they're sending it. And there is no way around it. In fact, I'll give you a real interesting anecdote. Last week, I was out in California, where the CEO of the company that developed this technology, he came up to me at an event, and he said, you know, every risk assessment we do, somebody or several people get fired. And that's very, very telling. I mean, that is, and these are not mom and pop shops. These are at, if I could tell you, and I can't, but these are some of the biggest names in American industry that are undergoing these risk assessments.
Okay. Well, let me, you know, we've talked about the financial industry a bit. We've talked about the healthcare industry. To your knowledge, are there any industries today that are getting it right?
Well, you know, for a long time, we all thought that the banking and finance sector was a model of information security in terms of, doing a sector-by-sector comparison. Everybody always points to the banking industry, the financial services industry, as the one sector that really had it right. Unfortunately, what I have found is that they certainly have it right in terms of protecting from the outside. Not 100% right, obviously, but they are heads and shoulders above many other sectors in terms of protecting from the external threat. But they are among the worst offenders of insider security lapses. And the data that I present in the Insider, it proves that. I mean, we're talking about some of the very top financial institutions in the country with budgets that would make some people's head spins in terms of their budgets for security, and yet they have proprietary customer data leaking like a sieve out of their organizations. So it's a very, very serious problem. I really can't point to any one industry or sector that is a model in this, because this data is so new and it is so shocking that it really shows that across the board, even in government, we're hemorrhaging data that should be protected.
So you've said that there is now the basis of technology that will help solve this problem. I think the bigger question, though, is what's it going to take before the companies start deploying the technology and taking the steps to actually solve the problem? Is it going to require some even more massive release of customer data? What do you think it's going to take?
Well, you know, I used to think, and like your question is implying, I used to think that it would take an example. I used to believe that as soon as somebody was made an example of, the industry would change. And you and I both know we've had many, many examples very recently of massive of identity thefts, and yet we still have a major problem. So I've changed my thinking a little bit on this, in that I don't know that an example can be made of an institution that will change the way people operate, but perhaps, and I think it's true, and correct me if I'm wrong, but we have not seen a chief security officer or a chief information security officer or a CIO get fired after their company has had a security incident, a major security incident. Nobody has lost their job, to my knowledge, after any one of these major hacking incidents or internal insider security incidents. And maybe that's the way the example will have to be made. All I know is that in other various areas of our society, such as the military, commanders who are in charge of a particular organization or unit, who are not necessarily on site when something goes wrong, are held responsible. And quite frankly, I'm waiting for the day when one of these 100 million identity theft schemes are announced to the world, that particular company's information security officer is publicly held to account and fired. And I don't know that it's going to happen.
That's interesting. That's interesting. You know, a lot of people are absolutely of the belief that it's only a matter of time before Congress steps in and we have another one of these large bills regarding privacy and protection of personal information.
That's right. And Kurt, I'll tell you right now, the next round, if that in fact does happen, the next round will be legislation that nobody will be able to live with, because it'll be that bad.
I'm not surprised to hear you say that, and that's frankly reflects a lot of what I'm hearing, as you know, from other folks in the industry.
Right.
It sounds like while a lot of people have been focusing on changing the culture down at the level of the people who handle the information, the computer operators, the database administrators, folks like that, you're saying that the real change of culture needs to happen up in the C-level executive suite.
Yeah, I think there's a point to be made there. We have spent a lot of time trying to educate our down in the weeds frontline workers about the issues surrounding information security, and we've spent an awful lot of time about informing people how to communicate security to the top levels of these organizations, but we've never, and we've done a terrible job of making security real for the chief executives at companies and government agencies. All they know is that information security is something that somebody is telling them is important, but we need to really make it real, and the way you do that is you put them in the room when some of these risk assessments are done, and you show them exactly what proprietary data is leaving their companies that they are responsible for, and then you communicate to them the regulatory and legal implications of their organizations losing that data and not protecting it properly. That makes it real to them, because what I profile in The Insider are examples of regulatory and legal nightmares that are waiting to happen for a lot of these companies. And that's the only thing today that chief executives really understand.
I think that this is certainly an issue that has become real to a lot of the people who have been victims of either identity theft or release of personal data. And I think you're onto something, making it real to the people who are in charge of the organizations. Sounds like a critical, not next step, but first step towards finding a real solution.
Yeah, there was one, just to give you another quick example, there was one assessment done at a major government agency, and one of the major findings throughout all sectors, including the government, has been that we are awash in pornography and inappropriate content, even though we think we have the filtering technologies in place. Most of these agencies and corporations are just awash in inappropriate content, sexual content, pornographic content. And they did an assessment at a major government agency, and the number of hate and racist web pages and pornographic web pages found in this agency was so bad that the executives from this agency had to either turn their heads or get up and leave the room.
Wow.
That's how bad the images were on this particular agency's infrastructure. So that's making it real for them, because just telling them that they have a problem is one thing. Showing them the extent and the reality of the problem really brings it home to them.
Very good. Well, Dan, this is, I think, an important book on a critical subject. I hope that a lot of people who are involved in the information security area will take the time to read it. And I very much appreciate you taking the time to talk with us today.
Thanks very much, Kurt. My pleasure.
Well, that was my interview with David Zumwalt. If you enjoyed what he had to say, if it was useful to you, then please let me suggest that you head over to Amazon or Barnes & Noble or one of the other booksellers, either online or in your community, and ask them for The Insider, A True Story, or one of Dan's other books. I know I'm putting his stuff on my reading list. As I said at the beginning of the podcast, we have more interviews coming up. I've spoken with David Zumwalt, with Mike Gibbons, and we have more things that are in development. One of the nice parts of this podcast is that as I do more of them, it gets easier to find people willing to talk with me, and that's always awfully nice. If there's someone you would like to hear me talk with on the Security Channel podcast, drop me a line at cfranklin@nwc.com or leave a comment here, and we'll do our best to get them on or to cover the topic that you would find interesting. We want this to be a great podcast for you, something that's interesting and hopefully fun to listen to. Well, thanks for stopping by and listening to this podcast. We hope that you will be safe and happy until the next podcast. And until then, this is Curtis Franklin for Network Computing saying goodbye.